Hello, this is Michael Steed, and in this podcast, I want to be taking a closer look at furnished holiday lets. You may recall on the tax update series this spring that I said that when we had some draft guidance from HMRC on the way that the furnished holiday let rules were going to work in 2011 and 2012 onwards, I said I'd get back to you by way of a podcast, and we're now at that moment. Because HMRC has produced some draft guidance on this, and it's that and the way that the rules work that I'd like to address in this podcast. Okay, now you know me by now. I like to start with a big picture, and it's this. If you were to stand right back and ask about letting property for an individual, the rules on companies aren't that dissimilar, but let's just make it clear that we are talking about individuals for a moment. My analysis follows the tax legislation. And that is to break property letting into two mega cardboard boxes. The first of those is the UK letting cardboard box, and then the overseas letting cardboard box. Now, within those two mega cardboard boxes, we need to make a further subdivision. Okay, so let's start with the UK mega cardboard box. Now, I like to see that subdivided into two divisions. The first is the normal letting rules, what you and I would probably think of as buy-to-lets, normal buy-to-lets. But the other part of the divided cardboard box, so the bit that I want to talk about in this podcast, which is the furnished holiday let part. And they are separate from the normal buy-to-let rules, because as you will be aware, they are treated, that's an important word, treated as a trade for tax purposes, that's these furnished holiday lets, and therefore they have favoured tax status in some, but not all, tax areas. Now, sometimes a furnished holiday let will not qualify, in other words, you haven't met the rules that we're about to go through, and therefore, by default, that property is no longer a furnished holiday let, and as far as I can see, it then has to fall back under the other part of the big cardboard box, that is, under the normal buy-to-let rules. Now, in the event, that may not be a terribly bad thing, but I just want to make that division clear, that there's the normal buy-to-lets in the UK and the furnished holiday lets within the UK. And in both cases, we have to kind of munch them all together. So if you had three or four buy-to-lets in different parts of the UK, it would all be treated as one UK property business. So that means, of course, that if you have a profit in one and, say, a loss in the other two, you have to amalgamate them and you'll get an overall profit or loss. And it's exactly the same rule for the furnished holiday let part of the mega UK cardboard box, that your furnished holiday let business is one business. And therefore, if you've got furnished holiday lets, say, in the wonderful county of Devon, and the equal wonderful county of Norfolk, then in those circumstances, you have to amalgamate them and you'll have an overall profit or loss. Now, I will come back to the treatment of profits and losses within those boxes shortly. But just to keep the picture large for a moment, I now want to leave the UK mega cardboard box alone and move to the overseas mega cardboard box. And just like the UK box, that is subdivided. As far as the normal buy-to-let business is concerned, let's deal with that sub-box first. That is the rest of the world, and I mean by that everything outside of the UK. So you could have a buy-to-let in Romania, you could have one in Florida, you could have one in Switzerland, you could have one in France. Maybe a couple of those are making profits, a couple of those are making losses, but it's exactly the same principle. You have to amalgamate them. You do not do it on a country-by-country basis, because ITOIA 2005 just says that as far as property businesses are concerned, it's UK and rest of the world. Okay, now in that overseas cardboard box, therefore, we've got the rest of the world and we've said that profits and losses are going to be aggregated. The other subdivision in the overseas box is the furnished holiday let box or sub box. And the furnished holiday lets only covers the European Economic Area, which crudely is the EC and a few bits around the side. All right, well, what are these bits around the edges? Well, the EC, the Club of 27, has got added to it, welded to the side, Norway, Liechtenstein, and Iceland. I don't suppose there are too many people with furnished holiday lets in Iceland, although it is a rather beautiful and craggy island. Let's now review what we need to know. I think the first thing is to stand back and acknowledge that there are two tax years in which the special rules for furnished holiday lets have changed. The first rules are already with us because they came in April 2011, and the second set of rules come in April 2012. The rules on losses have changed from 2011, and I'll be coming back to that in just a second. But the rule changes in 2012 are all about the availability and the days actually let, and we'll deal with those in just a second or two. So just to recap then, what are these special tax advantages? Well, the advantages, very crudely, and these continue through the changes in 2011 and 2012, are, and there's three of them. The first is that you can have capital allowances. You can have them in the let properties, as well, of course, as the plant and machinery used outside the properties, such as, you know, the normal vans, ladders, and tools. And if you recall, that's pretty unusual, because the Capital Allowances Act principally says that thou shalt not have capital allowances in domestic property, which, of course, gives us a clue, doesn't it, even for normal property buy-to-lets, which are not these special tax-favoured FHLs, that although you can't have capital allowances on items within the house, such as fixtures, furnitures, etc., you can actually still have it on the ladders, vans, and tools that are used outside of the property. Okay, so that's the first tax advantage, the entitlement to capital allowances. And the second one is this rather interesting and useful group of CGT reliefs. And that is, and probably the most important one, is entrepreneurs relief, when you finally get rid of your buy-to-lets. Business asset rollover relief. So if you decided to sell one buy-to-let and buy another one, and you reinvested the sales proceeds, then you would defer the gain, if any, on the first one. So that's pretty good too. And there are, I suppose, the final relief that's of great interest is that you can use the gift reliefs provisions as well within the TCGA 1992. So far, capital allowances, CGT, and the third one, and quite helpfully here, is that the profits themselves count as earnings for pension purposes. Now, we've been looking at pensions in quite a big way on the joint ATT-AAT events that we're currently running, and I will be doing a blog on pensions a little bit later in the year, but that won't be for a month or two yet. Okay, so let's go back to ask the question, exactly what do we need to do before we can qualify as a furnished holiday let? Right, well, the first thing is, just to recap, the property has either got to be in the UK or the European Economic Area. And the first thing is that it must be commercially let. Now, what does that mean? Well, you don't have to have a formal lease. It just means that it's got to be on a commercial basis and with a view to making a profit. And sometimes, as we know, on furnished holiday lets, we offer them as a sort of one-week, two-week basis during the course of the summer, you know, the main letting season from kind of spring half-term to the autumn half-term. And then maybe, to help defray costs, we'll actually let them over the winter on something like a six-month basis. As far as the commercially let provisions are concerned, there's no problem with an out-of-season let, because although it may not produce any profit, it'll help you defray your costs on the property. but that still can be treated as commercial. But if, on the other hand, you had a mother-in-law, say, come to live in the property for the 6 months close season, let me just very crudely call it the close season, especially if she's on a sort of a zero or nominal rent, then that will not be regarded as commercially let. So we need to be a bit careful about that. And in any event, that may give us a problem on the number of days that the property is available, and I'll deal with those in just a second or two. Accommodation is furnished, and this is a point that comes straight out of the help sheet and the legislation, if the people that are coming into it, the visitor, is entitled to the use of the furniture. So, in other words, there should be sufficient furniture around to make it a sort of a normal occupation. Okay, let's look then, and on the assumption that you've met the conditions so far, that it's in the UK or the EEA, and it's commercially let, and it's furnished. Now let's look at the availability tests. Because these don't change until 2012, April 2012, and hence for the 2012-13 tax year onwards. So we've got current rules that cover the current tax year, and then the new rules kick in April 2012. So what are these tests? Well, there are actually three of them. The first one is the availability test. The second one is the occupancy test. And people are kind of familiar with those two. But there is one other in there, and that is the pattern of occupation condition, and that's for long-term occupation. That's where you might want to fill it for 6 months in the winter. So we need to be clear that we have to pass all three of these. So let's have a look at the availability test. The first is that during the period, and just to be clear about that point, that's normally a tax year. So very crudely, it's a tax year. But where you have new lets and lets that are finishing, maybe on the way to being sold, then that period may not be a tax year. But let's just go for the simple one first. So during the tax year, here he goes, this is the test, the accommodation must be available for commercial holiday letting as a holiday accommodation for at least 140 days. That's the current 2011-12 tax year requirement, 140 days. Now, that's going up by 50%, and therefore, from April 2012, the availability test is that it must be available for 210 days. And of course, that's going to put a lot more pressure on people who have marginal furnished holiday lets. And you may fail, for example, because something happens in your family, mum and dad may need to come and live with you, all those kind of good things. So let's be clear about that. It's 140 days availability at the moment. It's going up to 210 in 2012. That's the first test. The second test, which is the occupancy test, is that during that availability period, the accommodation has to be commercially let as holiday accommodation for at least 70 days. That's in this current tax year. And that's going up by 50% too. And from 2012, the actually let test is going to 105 days. And just to be clear, that's from April 2012 onwards. So those are the first two tests, the availability test and the occupancy test. And the third one, this pattern of occupation test, is that the accommodation must not be let for periods of longer-term occupation for more than 155 days during the year. Now, we need to just drill down into a little bit as to what happens when you don't meet these conditions. The first part of this, I think, is just looking at the availability threshold. Because what sometimes happens with furnished holiday lets is that you get people who basically let out their own homes. And that's okay. So a property that's owner-occupied for a part of the year is all right to be treated as a furnished holiday let. but of course not while it's owner-occupied. So if you move out of your home during the holiday season and return to live there when the season's over, then the pattern of occupation is not a problem. But there's something else we need to know too, and that is, what happens when you don't reach the occupancy threshold? That is, you've got it available, but you haven't actually made the grade on the 70, soon to be 105 days. Well, there are two ways that you can get over this. The first is that if you've got more than one property, what you're allowed to do is use what is called an averaging election. And you can just average all of your days that were actually let. And then that can give you a number, which is, if it's over the threshold, will mean that they will all qualify. So let's have an example of that one. Supposing you've got somebody who's got four UK holiday lets, and all would otherwise qualify as furnished holiday lets. And if, say, you've got cottage one let for 120 days, cottage two let for 125, cottage three for 112, but cottage four is 64, then obviously cottage four would not qualify. But because you've got more than one cottage, then you're allowed to use the... Play me the last 30 seconds. So if you add up all those days, I think you get to 421 days. And if you divide that by four, then that is 105 days. So that would qualify both this year and also under the new 2012 rules. So the point's dead straightforward. By electing for averaging, all four will qualify. And if you don't average, then the fourth cottage, which is only let for 64 days, would not qualify. So that's pretty important. The other thing is what Revenue and Customs call the period of grace election, and I rather prefer to think of that as a roll-forward facility. Now, what am I talking about here? It allows you to treat a year as a qualifying furnished holiday let, where you met all the other conditions, you genuinely intended to meet the occupancy threshold, but were unable to meet it. So if you've got year one, where you've actually met the condition, let's just say you've let it for 112 days, and then in the next 2 years, you've fallen well below the limit. So let's just say, and using the new 2012 rules, where it's got to be let for 105 days, let's say that in years two and three, you only let it, say, for 80 and 70 days, respectively. And in the fourth year, let's say you get lucky again and you go up to 110. So you've got year one pass, year two fail, year three fail, year four pass. And what this period of grace election allows you to do is taking the first year, where you've let it for 112 days, to actually roll that forward. So that will frank, it'll stamp, if you like, the first year that you failed, that is, in our example, year two. So the 80 qualifies because of the credit, as it were, the roll forward from the last year's 112 days. And equally, because you can roll this forward for 2 years, the next year, where you've only got 70 days, it will also qualify. Okay, so just to be clear, you cannot roll forward under this period of grace election more than 2 years. So in our example, had year four also failed, then you wouldn't have been able to use the credit from our year one, where we'd let it for 112 days. So in that fourth year, the property would no longer have qualified as a furnished holiday let, and therefore it would need, and this is back to my mega picture, to drop back into the other part of the mega UK box, because I'm just using this example as a UK example. Now, what sort of conditions might we fail in? Well, the obvious one, the sort of unforeseen circumstances, adverse weather, even outbreaks of foot and mouth disease. But as long as you can show that there's a genuine intention to let the property in the year for which this period of grace election is made, then you are going to be okay. on challenge, I think you'll need to have shown that you've marketed it to at least the same or the greater level than in successive years, and that would, I think, stand as evidence of a genuine intention to let. So that's quite important. What I want to do now is to talk about losses. And as you'd expect, the rules are very restrictive. Let's go back to our mega cardboard boxes. You had the UK sort of normal buy-to-let part, and you had the furnished holiday-let part. And just to recall that in both of these sub-boxes, the rules are that you have to aggregate all of your profits and your losses. So in your normal buy-to-let, so if you've got one in Doncaster, one in Southampton, one in Aberdeen, and one's in profit, one's in loss, one's in profit, you just got to add them all together. That's a pretty well-understood rule. And if you've got a loss in your normal UK buy-to-let business, the only thing you can do with that is to carry it forward to set off against profits of that same UK business. But as far as the furnished holiday let rules are concerned, let's say you've got two or three cottages or even just one cottage, you add them up if you've got more than one, or you take it on a single basis if you've got just one. And if you've got a profit, you're going to be taxed on it. If you've got a loss, and here's the punchline, you cannot, repeat cannot, carry across the loss from the furnished holiday let into the normal UK buy-to-let. They're ring-fenced. And the only thing you can do with that furnished holiday let loss is to carry it forward against profits from the same UK property business, the same UK furnished holiday let business. Equally, the rules apply in the same way to your European economic area properties. You add them all together, and if you've got an overall loss, that loss cannot be set either against your other overseas properties, neither, and I want to be clear about this point, can it be set against your UK furnished holiday let. So all up then, and just to emphasise this, the rules are very, very restrictive. Okay, so that's the basic shape of how we tax furnished holiday lets under these new rules. But we wouldn't be doing ourselves justice if we didn't have a look at the wider picture. Let's first of all put our VAT hats on, and it's always exciting when we've got some VAT. The first thing is that holiday accommodation just has to be a T20. It's standard rated for VAT, and you cannot get out of that. Obviously, if you're a private individual and you're not VAT registered, then all you've got to do is to monitor your registration limit. But if you are in business, and the one that I've met moderately regularly in the past is where you have farmers who convert, say, the old cow sheds or the piggeries or a barn into holiday accommodation. And of course, there are two sides to the story, aren't there? Is what goes out and what comes in. Well, the what goes out is a T20, standard rated. Why? Because it says so in the VAT Act in Group 1 of Schedule 9, and you did want to know that, didn't you? But remember the basic VAT recovery rule, what goes out determines what comes in. And if we make a taxable supply, and I don't care what rate, but here we've got a T20, then we can recover all of the VAT, give or take, on the way in. Which means, of course, when I do my conversions of my barn or my piggeries or my cow sheds, then the VAT that I'm charged on that will be recoverable. So that's pretty good news. But let's, as we spiral down to the finish here, pick up on a little bit of bad news, and that's for inheritance tax. And the hard facts are that furnished holiday lets are very unlikely to rank for business property relief under the BPR provisions in the Inheritance Tax Act, because you're just not doing enough as far as the rules are concerned and as far as HMRC is concerned. So that's going to be the bad news. I suppose the good news is Class 4, and that is that because the profit's taxable as rental income, there are no Class 4s. So as far as the earnings are concerned, remember earnings is a key word for NIC, we haven't got earnings for NIC purposes and therefore no Class 4s, but it still counts as good news. And just to emphasise this point, for pensions purposes, it counts as earnings for pensions. Right, well, I think that's pretty much it on this one here, folks. Hopefully that's been some use to you. There are some details here on the property income manual. And as I said, HMRC have just released the draft help sheets to help you fill in the tax return, and they are also available on HMRC's website. Remember, the search engine isn't great, so if you don't get it on their search engine, just try it on Google. But you might want to find the details in the property income manual if there's anything that you need clarifying. And those can be located on the HMRC website. Just go into the search engine, hit manuals, and it'll take you down there in alphabetical order. And what you need is the property income manual, the PIM. Okay, well, I think that's it. I'm going to sign off now. I very much look forward to seeing you soon at our events. Cheerio.